Welcome to Uncommon Knowledge. I'm Peter Robinson. The program that you're about to watch was filmed in the Caribbean aboard the New Amsterdam during the National Review post-election cruise. That is just a few days after the election of November 2012. Uncommon Knowledge, a production of the Hoover Institution, today at sea with National Review. Shooting during the National Review post-election cruise, Uncommon Knowledge presents Rob Long, who will explain exactly why Republicans lost, and John Yoo, who will explain exactly why Rob Long is mistaken. Conservatism at sea. Uncommon Knowledge now. Welcome to Uncommon Knowledge. I'm Peter Robinson. In the mid-1980s, Rob Long moved from his home in the Northeast to Los Angeles to enroll in the writing program at the UCLA Film School. Within just a few months, his scripts had so impressed Hollywood that he was hired to produce the final three seasons of Cheers. Mr. Long was then 24. He has remained at the top of the television industry ever since. His newest comedy, Sullivan and Son, premiered on TBS last summer. John Yoo is professor of law at the University of California at Berkeley and a visiting scholar at the American Enterprise Institute. From 2001 to 2003, he served as Deputy Assistant Attorney General in the Office of Legal Counsel in the Justice Department of President George W. Bush. Professor Yoo is the author of many books, including Crisis and Command, A History of Executive Power from George Washington to George W. Bush. Rob, John, welcome.
Good to be here.
Thanks.
In the 57th election for the presidency in the history of the United States, Mitt Romney lost to Democrat Barack Obama by 48% to 51%, or by 206 votes in the Electoral College to Obama's 332. Rob Long will now tell us three lessons we have learned for sure. Robert?
All right, I'll go. I'll deliver to you straight. Republican brand is dead. Our operatives are incompetent, and we live in a dream world.
The brand is dead, our operatives are incompetent, and we live in a dream world.
I'm here to tell you.
Professor Yoo.
Well, the only reason that you have this air of despair about you, Rob, which is very uncharacteristic for you.
Well, not
my dad.
Really,
well, when you've been unstimulated by artificial ingredients. But this is all caused by an election where the Republican Party only lost by like 1.5 million votes out of 120 million cast. Right? Social statisticians would say this is almost measurement error. You could take the election the next day or the day before, or the week after, the week before. You could have a completely different result. So what I don't understand is why such a small, narrow victory in the popular vote should lead us to have basically regime change in the Republican Party. Instead, what we should say is the country is narrowly divided. That doesn't mean Republican principles demand that we should demand the, just tossing out a Republican Party, all its leaders, and the principles. It might mean that we need to modulate the message a little bit, but I wouldn't say that means the American people support Obama in totally revising our tax system in his favored direction, or totally overthrowing and immigration laws and replacing them with some new deal that we are compelled to make with a guy who has really no popular mandate at all. And one last thing about the electoral votes. The framers designed the Electoral College to give the illusion of more of a majority than someone will have.
To exaggerate the result.
Yeah, to try to give the president something of a mandate, because actually they thought that any individual candidate for president would actually not get majority votes from anybody in the country, because they designed it in a world before political parties.
They thought there might be multiple candidates rather than just two principal candidates.
Exactly. Right. They thought there might be five or six. And they thought most presidential elections would be decided in the Congress in the way we thought it might in 2000. But again, that means that we should not focus on the electoral vote count, important as it is, but that the real sign of what the people want is the popular vote. And notice that same popular majority elected the House of Representatives, which is supposed to be the real pulse-taking institution in our government. And there, a fairly large conservative majority was returned.
Rob, Jim Garrity of National Review, quote, had Romney won 407,000 or so additional votes in Florida, Ohio, Virginia, and Colorado, he would have had 275 electoral votes. He would have won. Just over 400,000 votes out of 120 million cast. Measurement error. You didn't learn 1, 2, 3. It was measurement error.
Robert, measurement error. I feel Robert, like Lawrence Fishburne in The Matrix. You're living in a dream world. Yes, they were more of them voted than us. They won the election. That's what matters. The idea that you could hold it up to the light and say, well, it's sort of a trivial or meaningless or statistically insignificant win is ludicrous. This president has now solemnized socialized medicine. That happened on Tuesday. This president has solemnized a tax hike for starting with the rich people, but it's going to be everyone else. This president is now putting the capstone on 40 years of progressive movement in this country to the left. We are not winning, we are losing, and we are living in a fantasy land. Look, you want to talk about statistics. The trivial election that you sort of think was just a meaningless, could have happened on Monday or Wednesday, well, it happened on Tuesday. We are now going to have a president who was elected, who's going to be able to select, with a democratically controlled Senate, because the Republican Party blew it, a democratically controlled Senate, the next two or three Supreme Court justices. Now, I don't know why that should bother conservatives much, because our conservative Chief Justice, John Roberts, apparently reads the election returns and the newspaper editorial pages, and he's not going to stand up to Obamacare either. But of course, those are the small statistics. What about the larger statistics? The trend line, 40 years. Roe v. Wade, law of the land, no sign of that being changed. $16 trillion in deficits. We have socialized medicine. We have practically an open border. We have gay marriage, which I'm in favor of, by the way, but gay marriage is increasingly the law of the land. Where do you see the signs of hope? Where do you see any advance? And I have some bad news for you, Peter, because I know you're a Reagan partisan and you love him, and I love him too, and I know John, you does too, but the Reagan, 8 years of Reagan's presidency are looking like a parenthesis, a pause, a sort of a minor little nap that the American voting public took on its march to European socialism. I'm done. I want to drink at this point.
I brought my mother on the cruise. She's a psychiatrist. She has what you need, and we'll give you the first hour. First hour for free.
She's a psychiatrist. I don't need an hour. I just need a script.
So let's widen the lens even farther. Right? We still live in Reagan's America. Suppose what Obama actually said during the debates on the campaign mattered instead of the avalanche, the $1 billion of negativity they threw into the political system, which also deprives him of a mandate. He put no positive platform out for the voters to approve. But instead, look at the longer term. Barack Obama campaigned as the fiscal conservative, right? He attacked Romney in the debates for spending too much in tax credits, for not cutting the budget. This shows the political terms of debate are still Reagan's.
No, right?
They're not. You don't win by saying, I want to spend a lot more money, right? That's not Obama's position. In the campaign, he attacked Republicans for busting the budget. So I think the longer term story is the blips are Clinton and Obama. They still operate within the terms of debate that Reagan spoke. And this is not just my view. This is the view of a lot of political scientists who study the presidency.
They are all wrong. They are all wrong. And the idea that Barack Obama campaigned on a smaller government is not true. He campaigned on raising taxes. He won on raising taxes. There's not one moment where he said, I'm going to cut this or shrink that. We all know where that begins. That's the start. The two signal moments of sort of conservative victory in the past 50 years, I'll say, one is Reagan winning the Cold War, and the second is Bill Clinton's welfare reform. We are in retreat. This is what retreat feels like.
Note that Newt Gingrich and the Republicans sent that to him three times before he signed it.
I don't disagree.
I'd like to call it Newt Gingrich's welfare reform. But go ahead.
I'll accept that. And here's even worse news for you. The American people seem to want us on the right and the Republicans to be the management consultants, the efficiency experts to the welfare state. We're there to fix it and make it optimized and make it more efficient. Or we are the grown-ups they elect every now and then to cause a little upheaval in the House. Not the Senate, in the House, as we march a bit more slowly and more judiciously towards European socialism.
Rob, you're right that President Obama is in charge of the administrative state. He's going to get to issue the flood of regulations on Obamacare, every other subject under the sun. He's going to strangle the economy while he does it. But he doesn't have a mandate to do it. You're just saying he has the power because he's in control of the executive branch. That is true. But when he proceeds through this, he does not have a mandate. The narrow victories of 400,000 votes that would have swung the election a different way, the fact that he put on no positive platform, aside from, I want to raise taxes on rich people, the fact that his campaign is completely negative, the fact that he doesn't have the House, means that we are a divided country
that
seems to like stalemate.
John, hold on, let me ask.
He won.
He won.
Right, but
that's
he doesn't. But he doesn't have a mandate to carry
this is
out
what I mean.
Positive.
A, this is what I mean. We live in a dream world. We are not projecting onto the future all the restrictions that Barack Obama, by the way, does not feel he has.
Right, but this means that Republicans have the legitimacy to continue to filibuster all of Obama's major pieces of legislation for the House, to promote a budget and that's contrary to Obama's, to refuse a tax deal, to refuse Obama's immigration
policies. John, why are you
policies.
Not? Why are you not, if this is Reagan's America, you can take a step farther and you could say, I'll quote Tommy DeSanto, who posted this on Ricochet about Romney. Did the man who said, I'll keep the good parts of Obamacare, really put the conservative base in fighting spirit for the campaign? Conservatism didn't lose. The base didn't lose. Romney lost. So why don't you go a little bit farther and say, if only Romney had been more conservative, he would have picked up those 407,000 votes. Isn't that consonant with your larger argument that this remains Reagan's America?
I mean, we all...
I'm doing your work for you, by the way.
Yes, yeah, no.
No, obviously candidates matter. Rob was on a panel last night at sea, you know, yucking it up with you and Jonah Goldberg, and I think they kept saying, I'm not going to criticize Romney, but candidates matter.
Right.
And so surely that's right that... I'm not saying I live in a dream world, but even with a candidate who was not our best candidate, right, guy who flip-flops on issues, who's a moderate at heart, right, who, I think Jonah said, who speaks conservatism as a second language, right, a guy who I think carried out, I think actually a fairly inept campaign strategy. And if you remember, until the first debate was 5 to 7 points behind and everyone thought was going to lose, Republican donors were actually going to start shifting money to the Senate and House races, and maybe they should have done that in the end. Even so, we came within 400,000 votes of winning the election. This is, to me, that doesn't, conservatively, it just means there's no mandate for Obama, and perhaps what we would have better off doing is winning the Senate and the House. But you can't do that in a country that's unified behind progressivism. They're not. In fact, I think what you see is a country that liked Obama a lot personally. Maybe they want to soak the rich a little bit, but I think they actually agree more fundamentally with core Republican principles. We just had a very, unfortunately, we had a guy carrying that message to the people who was not our best. And there's something wrong with our political system on the Republican side when our field of nominees includes, right, Herman Cain, Newt Gingrich, Santorum. You know, these were not our best candidates. And of course, Romney was going to win because he wasn't competing against the best people. If you look to 2016, we've got a great deep bench of young conservatives that's not matched by the Democratic side.
Weak candidate, lousy campaign. Mm-hmm. Not underlying principle. The country isn't moving away from us. We just had a lousy candidate who ran an inept campaign.
I agree. So you all are reading the newspaper from 2008. Because that's what we said in 2008. It's exactly what we said in 2008.
I didn't say that in 2008. I actually thought, I mean, Obama won a fairly large majority.
Yes, 7 points. It was unambiguous.
You know, and it was a clear, and he had the House and filibuster proof in the Senate. He was entitled to carry out his program.
John,
then,
listen to this.
But he can't carry it.
John, political analyst Bill Schneider, quote, what we are seeing here, he's talking on election night, what we are seeing here is a race between the old America and the new America. The old America is white men like Mitt Romney. The new America is winning. It's young people, it's minorities, it's foreign-born Americans, it's women, it's sexual minorities, it's racial minorities, it's a whole new demography that has just managed to win. Close quote. The demographics have moved away from the conservatism.
I think this is always a failure to learn from history. So let me describe a different situation. Millions of immigrants coming to our shores, massing in the cities. One party supports and one party doesn't. That's 1880, that's 1890, that's 1900. A huge flood of Eastern Europeans, Italians, Irish immigrate to our shores. They do not fundamentally change American politics. The Republican Party basically dominates the political system from Lincoln all the way through to FDR. The Republican Party will adapt and has to adapt to take into account the changing demographic, but that doesn't mean that it really fundamentally upset the balance of power. Has there been any period in American history where immigration actually changed the political conversation so much that it threw down one party that had the better arguments and raised up the other party? I don't think so. I think actually immigration doesn't tend to have that effect.
Well, here I agree. But if we're talking about the
FDR, the New Deal coalition lasted for 4 decades, and it was built on new immigrants.
Continues to last now. I mean, it has lasted beyond that.
Excuse me. I will go ahead.
What I was going to say is the 400,000 votes or 500,000 votes, whatever it is.
407, according to Gary.
Okay. It it means that every vote is important. And the idea that our base shrunk. We lost white Catholics in Ohio, in a state in which the Catholic Church campaigned rather outspokenly for Romney. We do this on our side. When we lose, we get a drubbing. We spend about a day lashing ourselves, and the rest of the time trying to prove how we didn't lose at all, and that actually, no, everything's fine. We just need a better package. Look, we need to. I agree that we don't have to like throw out principles, but we do need to broaden the party to appeal to more people. Because if these elections are going to be close, like this one, if they're going to continue to be close, an election that I don't think anybody at this table thought should be close. I mean, after the sorry and horrible performance of this president, there's no reason why it shouldn't have been a romp for us. But the fact that it was suggests that this party, the more narrow it gets, the more when elections get closer, it's going to lose. We sound like the Green Party.
The military makes a distinction between strategy and tactics.
Right.
And so we can have a debate. We can talk about a lot of tactical mistakes the Romney campaign made. To me, a lot of what you're saying sound like tactical mistakes. You know, different ways they could have appealed to broader constituencies, included minorities and so on. But I think what I hear you saying, and I would totally agree, is that the fundamental strategy of being for free markets, free men, free minds, is not the wrong strategy. It's just a matter of how you carry it out to achieve your
goals. Do you
see
what he just did? He just pummeled your position and then said, but that's all right, we're on the same side.
No, what didn't pummel? The military also has a habit of when they lose, calling it a loss. When they actually lose a war or a battle, they say, we lost it. They don't say, well, if you really think about it right.
Well, no, but there's also, you could lose a battle but not lose the war.
Right, but
if you
set out a strategy the past 40 years, you said, okay, we lost the battle on socialized medicine. We lost the battle on big government. We lost the battle on deficits. We lost the battle on taxes. We lost the battle on social issues. I'm sorry, what are the battles that are left?
Take Obamacare alone. One point that Rob is making here is that this is irreversible. This is irreversible. The country's suddenly ratcheted to the left, and whether or not Barack Obama had a mandate to do it, he did it. And as Obamacare begins to be enacted over the next 4 years, which it will be, it will begin to shape and mold the American character, American expectations. It's the point that Mark Stein has made over and over and over again, that even Margaret Thatcher never thought about touching the National Health Service in Britain. Some expansions of government, whether they take place under mandate, for whatever reason they take place, become irreversible and shape the people who live under them.
So like Obamacare is kind of like the kudzu of American politics.
Just expands,
you can't cut. I really disagree with that. One is, if you control the House and you control the power of the purse, then you can't repeal Obamacare, but you can slow it down a lot. You can cut funding for regulators.
That's my point exactly.
No, and I'm saying that
we can't stop the progressive liberal movements. We can just slow it down.
No, but until 2016, when you can go to the country and say, we want a mandate to get rid of Obamacare. Now, this goes to our tactics.
We did that. That's what we had in 2012.
We picked a candidate who was especially vulnerable on attacking Obamacare. And I hate to say it, the Supreme Court helped out Obama. Chief Justice Roberts, we could talk more about this another time, but Chief Justice Roberts, I think, wrote a constitutional opinion that was profoundly mistaken because he was faked out by Obama. He did it to escape political attacks on the Supreme Court by the president, and I think he was wrong to do it, and instead he handed over the right to nominate, as you point out, and appoint Supreme Court justices for the next four years.
Okay, so stop there. This is really I'm just going to repeat the question to give you a chance to recant. John Roberts... It was a 5-4 decision.
Yeah.
They did decide it. The Constitution is heretofore to be interpreted in a different and, from our point of view, in a way that is permanently friendlier to the welfare state, to the expansion
and
of
in
government.
The next four
that
years,
has happened.
Yeah. And in the next 4 years, in a statistically meaningless election, the next 4 years, that in the statistically meaningless election we had, we're going to have more Sotomayors and more Elena Kagans on the court. And we're going to have them because we have lost our base. It's shrunk, and it's not coming back unless we do something.
Is this my chance to recant?
Yes.
I will not do it. Good.
No, but okay. Surely the Supreme Court, as you say, has said that Obamacare is constitutional, and here's a new avenue to grow the welfare state through the tax system, which I think was profoundly mistaken on the part of the Chief Justice. But you. Obama doesn't have the political legitimacy of a mandate that would allow him to implement the most radical reforms, to allow him to overcome obstructionism in the House, overcome filibusters in the Senate. The Republicans have a mandate to grind government to a standstill, I think, over the next 2 years until the next election.
I will pay you $1,000 if they do that.
Which brings us to...
They will not do that.
Which brings us to... Okay, well, we now have your different
analyses. Boehner's already making deals.
We now have your differing analyses of what took place. You've had a run at convincing each other. You remain unconvinced. What should the what should conservatives do at this hour?
Well, look, here's the thing that we
You know some conservatives.
I know a few of them. as you know, I'm a rhino squish. Look, there are two states that are interesting to me, right? There's Missouri and there's Wisconsin. Missouri is usually a very conservative state, went for Romney. But the party, not the Tea Party, not the party establishment in Washington, but the actual rank and file members nominated for the Senate in Missouri,
Todd Akin,
a fool, and a stubborn fool, and he went down in flames. And we forced conservatives and Republicans, a lot of them in Missouri, to vote for Romney and then contort themselves into a vote for Claire McCaskill. We forced them to do that because we live in a dream world. You look at Wisconsin. Wisconsin has an actual conservative hero governor, probably one of the only most effective governors, Scott Walker, in the country. He stared down the public sector unions. He was pushed back by the unions, forced to a recall. He stared that down. He's still in the state house. Wisconsin's a traditionally progressive liberal state. It's been that way forever. Probably not going to change. But the voters in Wisconsin managed to vote for a very, very conservative, fiscally responsible, fiscally conservative governor, an anti-union governor, not just a flinty, you know, northeastern Republican, but an anti-union governor, activist governor.
In all kinds of ways, actually a radical governor.
And at the same time, they managed to wrap their head around sending probably the most progressive senator in years to Washington, to D.C. They managed to do that, and they did that without too much trouble.
From which it follows that?
That we as Republicans need to appeal to people who may be socially liberal, I know you're going to hate this, but who are fiscally conservative. Because that's the way to enlarge the party.
Let me cap it off with something even more apocalyptic.
You're going to hate even more because I want to give you the full meal. Gay marriage is
on its way to diet.
You're on a cruise. Gay marriage is on its way to becoming pretty much universal in the country. And our argument against it is, well, you know, marriage is a sacred institution. The divorce rate in this country is 50%. There's not one American citizen who's not one or two people away from a divorce. That argument that somehow the actual act of a union is sacred sounds to most Americans like we live on Mars, like we are not living in America. And you cannot win a population, you cannot win the majority of the population if you don't convince them you live in the same planet, in the same country, in the same year as they do.
Okay, so we toss the social issues over the
side. No, I didn't say that. If you are pro-life or if you're against gay marriage or any of those other social issues, there are plenty of avenues for you to convince and persuade the American people outside of national politics, outside of Congress. It just sounds to most Americans who are decent, sort of fair people, it sounds to them like you're trying to make an end run around them. Convince me. Don't legislate at me.
Ask me, is this a fair summary? Nominate candidates realistically. And in many places of the country, if not most places of the country, the formula for an electable candidate is fiscally conservative but socially liberal. And if you are socially conservative, do that in politics and in your own time, work to change the culture. But politics requires fiscal conservatives and social liberals. Is that your position?
I would call that realism. Look, wait.
John, over to you.
Okay, we'll talk about abortion in a minute.
Over to you.
No, I actually agree with Rob probably on the social issues in terms of policies, but I think what an ideal candidate would do for a Republican Party is, I agree, fiscally conservative, and then on social issues, leave it up to the states and let the people pursue a democratic process to figure it out. That's always been the conservative criticism of Roe versus Wade that brings together conservatives and libertarians. It should be the same on gay marriage and a whole host of other social issues. That means within the party, you can have people who want to get rid of Roe versus Wade for the whole country if they can work through the process, and people who might be pro-choice, I think, as we are. And I think that's a good package. That is not inconsistent with core Republican values.
Oh no! Now, now that you see a chance to gang up against
me. No. But that is because that respects the constitutional system that our framers set out for deciding political issues.
And I think it would actually just take the pro-life movement in specific. I think it would actually
Look, you've encouraged him, and he does not need.
I have a law professor on my side. He's my lawyer. You can talk to my lawyer.
Where's my $750 for this hour? Right. You're already stiffing me on like all the other Hollywood
actors.
Could,
yeah, that's right.
But look, that is not just a conservative position. I think that's a conservative approach that will appeal to the electorate. Mm-hmm. Is that's kind of,
George,
those are
ahead.
The kind of conservatives that can win in California or Wisconsin or Missouri.
I know that you two are in agreement, I'm
looking for a way to wrap this up.
I'm asking you only, I know it's hard to argue this because it's hard to believe that I'm in good faith, but in good faith, it would probably move the needle on abortion towards the pro-life side to actually, instead of these sort of complicated arguments where you vote for a president because he might nominate Supreme Court justices who might overturn Roe v. Wade, which I think we now know will never happen. It will never happen. The Chief Justice John Roberts, example one, he reads...
You just got a very skeptical look.
I'm sure.
I wish you could have seen it. I hope we got a tight camera. Actually, could you do that look over again? Close
it
on,
is
close
a long shot. It is a long shot.
It's like... Yeah. I'm sorry.
But the past 40 years, where has the country gone? The strategy
polls show that more people are pro-life
you'll
in this country
than
pro-choice. I mean, actually, but that's good.
But
because
it's a cliche now, but I'll say it. There's only one poll that matters, the ones we had on Tuesday. On Tuesday,
the
working class
falls
Catholics...
Within, the one that falls within the statistical measurement error, but...
Tuesday, working class Catholics voted for the most pro-abortion president in American history.
Yes. And every single exit survey showed that was about the 27th concern. It was the economy...
In working class Catholics voted for Obama. And you can either pretend that that's a statistical thing, you can hold up to the light and say, well, actually, if you look at it this way, it's fine.
This is inconsistent, Rob, with your other diagnoses.
Wait a minute, I'd be consistent here?
Because you were initially saying, we got to make a deal on immigration, we're losing minorities. Now it becomes a class matter. And right, you could say, was the election lost because we lost lower income whites, lower income religious, people who would otherwise have gone for the Republican Party, but they're turned off by a plutocrat, an extremely rich guy that we happen to nominate for our party. If we had nominated someone who didn't have those problems,
they did not turn out to vote.
We lost 2.5 million votes. Here, these are the interesting statistics, too, that if Romney had gotten the same number of votes as McCain and maybe a touch more, he would have won. Obama lost 10 million votes from the last election. Somehow Romney managed to lose 2.5 million Republican votes. And those 407,000 in those key states seem to be, from the studies that are going now, concentrated in counties that have very religious, lower income people. Losing those voters does not mean there's some great, you know, rethink of the Republican Party that we need.
California.
It instead shows that we need better tactics on the ground.
All three of us live in California. Jerry Brown got elected 2 years ago. He just enacted a ballot initiative to raise taxes. It was enacted by about 4 percentage points. We lost, I don't remember the final, as we went to see, there was at least one or two districts in doubt, but it looks as though the Republican House delegation has shrunk in California. That is to say, Democrats picked up House seats, and in both houses of the state legislature, Democrats won so many seats that they now command supermajorities in the California Senate and in the California Assembly. So, is it the case that California is simply lost, even as New England is lost? And this entire discussion among the three of us Californians only applies to the middle of the country.
I think the state is screwed in the short term when Jerry Brown is the most meaningful restraint on activist government, right? But actually, this is what the framers wanted to happen, is that when there's a national party comes in, like the Obama Democrats, that you have these opportunities at the state and local level for the other party to take over and try out their policies and see if they work. And so I think what Republicans or conservatives should do is make a concerted effort to take over the governments through the electoral process, not through revolt, but take over some of these cities that are in such bad shape in California.
Such as?
Oakland, the one I live next door, Fresno, Stockton, the ones that are going bankrupt, and put in conservative, pro-growth, tough-on-crime policies. And if they work just like Giuliani when he came in as mayor of New York, that is going to lead to right? Eventually, adoption by other parts in the country, and vindication for the Republican brand and Republican principles. But you got to try it out somewhere and actually take responsibility for making it work.
Am I looking at the next mayor of Venice Beach?
No, well, Venice, as you know, is a part of Los Angeles, so you'd have to run. But
I secede.
But yeah, listen, it would be crazy. Just I can't even imagine what Venice, unmoored by the realism of the L.A. County
Hollywood,
right? But I think John is exactly right, and but moreover, what he's pinpointing is a metropolitan strategy, a strategy to win the cities back. The cities are cesspools of liberalism.
He's actually quite interesting on this one. Go ahead.
They are cesspools of liberalism. I'll just take LA. LA is a canard of a city. It's near bankruptcy. LA Unified School District is practically a criminal monopoly. If we were honest, we'd call it a mob. It's basically the Genovese family. And it delivers
because they're shaking down taxpayers and failing to educate.
Yes.
Well, that's every major inner city school system.
At least the Genovese family did offer protection. They protected you from the Gambino family, which is what you were trying to get. But those are the cities. Those seem to be, and they are disproportionately ethnic minorities. They are disproportionately new immigrants. They are a cacophony of small businesses and sometimes unlicensed and unregulated businesses, which, as far as I'm considered, my cold Republican heart, are the best kind of businesses, right? So this seems like fertile ground for us. But if we continue to talk past them as if we're speaking to an America from 1950 or to an America that doesn't exist, they just turn us off. We can't compete with patronage. We can only compete with ideas.
But how are we talking past them? I mean, I understand why you think that we have a political platform that won't appeal to people who live in the cities. We have, if you want to have free markets, voucher systems for schools, deregulation.
It hasn't for 40 years. Yes.
Well, did Giuliani put it into practice in New York City? We need to make a more serious effort to try to take Republican principles to the city and state level.
Giuliani was a pro-choice, pro-gay marriage Republican.
Does it have to be?
I rest my case.
Does it have to be Republicans, John? The mayor, Democratic mayor of San Jose, just got a ballot initiative through which limits payments to unions. Cory Booker is the Democratic mayor of Trenton,
Newark,
excuse me, and he seems to be in other words,
and he's going to run for governor.
Maybe the action in a place like New England, all of the Northeast, maybe the action in California is going to be within the Democratic Party.
What you're going to see, and Rob may disagree with this given his view on Obama's great mandate, but what you're going to see is Obama's just going to spend the next 4 years playing defense. They're just going to try to preserve from the first term. National politics for the Democrats is going to be stale. People are going to become discontent with it. Reform efforts and change are going to come from the Republican Party.
Is a catastrophe going to take place within the next 4 years?
At the national level, fiscally, it's very hard to see how we get out of this without the economy slowing down to zero. Or, you have other experts on the ship who know about economics, but even if you raise, as Rob said, even if you raise the taxes on the upper band of taxpayers, that's still not going to solve the budget deficit.
There's a thought to cheer you up. The catastrophe is coming.
The catastrophe is coming. Well,
and it's speeding up. We're going to it faster.
Let me posit
another
nightmare scenario.
Go ahead.
Because there's a market that's now open, which I think is bad for us, but interesting. If the voters, in my opinion, they seem to be identifying the Republican Party as a pit bull they keep leash tight. And it's right there, and they unleash us when they feel they need us, they pull us back when they feel they don't need to pull us back. We are the rabid pit bull in the dog run. Then it opens up a whole area for the Democrats, being the big tent party, for what used to be very, very, very unstoppable Democratic politicians, conservative Democratic governors. If you're Chris Christie, and you're thinking about maybe running for president someday, and you think, well, I might have teed off a lot of Republicans with my Obama embrace after Hurricane Sandy. What's to stop him from becoming a conservative Democrat? What's to stop the governor of New Jersey, who stared down the teachers' unions, from becoming a conservative Democrat? Staring down the teachers' unions, by the way, in the Democratic Party, is no longer radioactive. Rahm Emanuel did it.
The thing that stops them are the other people in Democratic coalition. They won't have someone who's in favor of vouchers. They won't have someone who's anti-public union. This is why the Democratic Party, I think, in the next 4 years is going to come to something of a collapse, because they have put in so many different membership parts of the coalition. They cannot, and I think that's why Obama can't have a positive platform. They have so many people who can veto all the different policies they have. They can't actually come forward with a coherent platform. It's very typical second-term administrations have been in power a long, even Reagan's second term, Bush second term, Clinton's second term. They more often than not fail. In fact, there's very few successful second-term presidencies. Part of it is because the coalitions they build become ungovernable. And so that gives the Republican Party the Republican Party the opportunity. This is just lessons of history. The party out of power has a chance to renew itself, to rearticulate the principles in a clear way, translate those in positive, and put them effect at the state level in this season, show that they work. When Obama's and the administration is going to be paralyzed.
Okay,
for the next
predictions. Go ahead.
The Republican Party has an opportunity, but it is a Olympic gold medalist at frittering those opportunities away.
Midterm elections. The question is, will the Republican Party learn the lessons you believe it needs to learn, which are different from the lessons John believes it needs to learn, and gain seats in the Senate? Just tell me, when do you expect a rebound? You expect the Republican Party to remain a shrinking sort of a rump party and disappear like the Whigs, don't you?
No, I don't.
Well, then what do you expect?
I expect that we'll lose seats in the House. We'll pursue an obstructionist agenda, which I think we might have to. I think we might even lose seats in the Senate, and I think that we'll be the pit bull, the voters' pit bull. They'll threaten to unleash us all the time.
The history of midterm elections for second-term presidents is out of power, you gain seats. We'll gain seats in the House and we'll gain seats in the Senate. And we'll actually...
Because of the pendulum or because the party will learn the lessons you think it needs to learn?
Two things is because people will be sick and... People are already sick and tired of Obama. They'll be ready to toss the people out, the Obama administration out in 2 years. Plus, so that's part of it. That's just naturally going to happen if we not change
Don't
at all.
Don't give me that look. Give him that look.
I'm giving it to both of you.
That's if the Republican Party didn't change at all, we would still gain seats in the House and the Senate. But if we actually take advantage of the opportunity and reformulate our principles in a clearer way and sell them better, I think we'll get majorities in the Senate to combine with the majority in the House and really start turning it around in the way, although it'll be harder, start turning it around the way that Gingrich Congress did with Clinton in charge.
All right, last question. In this 237th year of the Republic, in which, according to you, we've endured 40 years of drift to the left, and in which, according to both of you, a catastrophe is coming, give me the best reason for being optimistic about the United States of America. John?
Well, I think the country's been in much worse shape in the past. You know, we tend to think, oh, the last election was a disaster. The country's just so badly. I mean, compared to where the country's been before in the Great Depression, the Civil War, when we lost 600,000 soldiers in combat, and after the Civil War, the country came out better and stronger than it was before. This is not so bad compared to the past challenges of confronting the country in American history. And throughout it all those different wars, crises, the American people and our governing system are amazingly resilient. We've not had a revolution. We've not had to change the Constitution. We have it within ourselves to renew, unlike the countries in Europe that have spent the last 100 years killing 20 million some of their own people, with the terrible wars in Asia. America really is a paradise of stability and growth compared to the rest of the world. So I think we're just tending to look myopically on this last defeat. There are people who are overreading defeat, thinking it's the end of the world when they just lost one battle, good friend Rob. And actually, if you look at the longer story of American history, we should not be pessimistic.
Would you like to answer just sit in silence for a moment, out of respect for the beauty of what John just said.
Out of respect for the delusional,
optimism about the Republic.
All right, about the Republic.
Yes.
I will give
Not
it to
the
you.
Republican Not the Party, Republican Party, the Republic.
I will say this. The joke, and then I'll be serious. But
wait, the joke with you, which one
which is
the one?
I know, I know.
He has to announce this to make sure that we laugh.
When you go to Europe and you order a drink, you say you order a water, even. They bring it to you in a bottle, and it tells you how many centiliters you're going to get. In America, you get free refills. It's a small thing.
No, it's not.
But I think it's a big thing.
You're also, right. In Europe, you get charged €5 for just sitting at the table.
Just sitting at the table. Right? This is a country of boundless generosity when it needs to have it, of an enormous largesse, big dreams, big dreamers. You know, you can't tax that away. You can't regulate that away. And that's what's either going to carry us through if we look at the world slightly more realistically. But I think we will. And I think it's not going to be easy. And I think it's going to mean a lot of us are going to have to do a lot of compromising on
No. Just give me the point about the optimism. All right, now we have to let John respond. Go ahead.
But I ultimately think that we'll be a stronger and more prosperous and more free republic.
See, now he's going for the big moment, the big...
That we are not going to get a better and freer republic if we agree to Obama's tax deal, we agree to Obamanian amnesty for illegal immigrants. So I agree with you on all the big principles. I'm very optimistic about the country. I've always been so. Gold is not rising, shooting up in price. If things are really badly off, you would see big financial changes. People still remain optimistic in the country. Take it down to the level of policies, though. If you really think the election was close and you really think our principles are still good, that means we don't have to compromise on all these issues when Obama is the one with the weaker hand who went to the country and he lost 10 million votes.
Out of respect for a quarter of a century of friendship, you get the final word. Go ahead.
I'll know that we're going to be okay, not just okay, but we're going to be better than okay when I get to vote for Senator John Yoo in California.
Senator,
I am not a crook.
Or governor.
What about mayor of Oakland?
I would do that.
You heard it here.
All right, I will have a fundraiser in my house, which is a little farther south.
What about writing a check right now?
I hope you have a very, very small house.
No. We will, because that, just not to sort of derail your peroration here, but that is the future. That is the future. Strong.
If John Yoo is the future, I'm for it.
Yeah.
Rob Long. Mayor Yoo, thank you very much. At Sea with National Review, I'm Peter Robinson. Thank you.